This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're going to talk about the Bush administration and its environmental record, a subject about which there is great division in America, as you'll hear from our two guests. In an article in this month's edition of Rolling Stone, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says that the Bush administration is rolling back America's environmental laws and weakening the protection of our country's air, water, public lands, and wildlife, but has hidden its anti-environmental program behind deceptive rhetoric. We'll hear from Kennedy in a moment. Later, we'll talk with Charlie Kuhn, the senior policy analyst for energy and the environment at the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. She says that the president is doing the right thing by trying to balance energy, the economy, and the environment. My first guest, Robert Kennedy Jr., is an environmental lawyer and activist. He's the senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council and the president of Waterkeeper Alliance. You said that President Bush will go down in history as America's worst environmental president. We'll get into some of the details of why you've reached that conclusion, but give us the overview of why you say that.
He's the worst environmental president that we've ever had because of his deliberate, concerted efforts to dismantle 30 years of environmental law and his capacity, because he controls his, the anti-environmentalists now control not only the White House, but both houses of Congress. So his ability, his capacity to actually do it. And if you look at NRDC's website, the Natural Resources Defense Council, you'll see that President Bush currently has over 200 major environmental rollbacks or weakening of environmental laws that are now being promoted by this administration. If even a fraction of these are passed over the upcoming year, we will, by this time next year, have effectively no significant federal environmental laws left in our country. This is not exaggeration. This isn't hyperbole. This is a fact. Many of our laws will remain on the books in one form or the other, but they'll be unenforceable. And we will be like Mexico, which has these wonderful, even poetic environmental laws, but nobody knows about them and nobody complies with them.
You've said that the environmental laws will be unenforceable. What will make them unenforceable if the Bush administration plans go through?
Well, the laws are being chipped away within the agencies to redefine them to narrow their scopes dramatically. For example, the Clean Water Act, under a new Bush proposal, would only protect navigable waters. The Clean Water Act now forbids the discharge of pollution into any waterway in the United States, whether it's a small stream or a wetland or Lake Erie. But the Bush administration wants to change that definition so that it will only protect waterways that are actually, in fact, navigable. This will exclude up to half of the waters and streams, stream miles in our country. Another proposal the Bush administration has already passed and is already doing tremendous damage to waterways across the country is it's rewritten the Clean Water Act so that it will no longer protect waterways against the discharges of solid waste. This includes mining waste, rubble from construction debris, garbage. A year ago, if you wanted to discharge those things into waters of the United States, you would have had to get a permit. Under the current administration interpretation, Clean Water Act permit is no longer required. But the most damaging part of these, the kind of neutron bomb of these proposals, are a series of super mandates, what are known as super mandates, which are small laws that seem innocuous that can actually eviscerate all of our environmental laws at once. One of these that has been promoted by the Bush administration is the Property Rights Protection Act, or the Takings Bill, which they're trying to attach to some of these must-pass budget bills. And what that bill says is that government can't enforce or pass a legislation that diminishes somebody's property values unless it first goes and pays the property owner the cost of complying with the law. Now, if government had to pay people not to do bad things on their property, government would simply cease to exist. You could not print enough money. If you had to pay people not to dump solid waste or not to dump sewage into waterways from their property or not to put toxics into the air, not to kill endangered species, or fill wetlands. Even if in filling that wetland, they're going to destroy a community water supply, they're going to cause floods in the local community, they're going to destroy local populations of fishes and birds that other members of the community rely on, You still would be, we would have to pay you not to do that in order to enforce the law. So, of course, none of these laws would ever be enforced again. And it's ridiculous because every law diminishes somebody's property values.
One of the things you do is prosecute polluters. You're an environmental lawyer. Is your job prosecuting polluters becoming more difficult?
It is, because the laws themselves are being undermined, and I'll give you a couple of examples. 12 years ago, I brought a lawsuit against the utility, big power plants, for killing fish, against the industry itself for killing fish. I actually sued EPA for failing to pass regulations that regulate fish kills at power plants. Some power plants, these antiquated power plants that use once-through cooling to cool their steam coils, suck in billions of gallons of water. For example, on the Hudson River, the Indian Point power plant uses 1 million gallons a minute. Well, all the fish that are in the river also get sucked in and killed. On the Delaware River, there's a one power plant, the Salem Nuclear Power Plant, that kills, according to its own consultant, Martin Marietta, 175 billion with a B bay anchovies every year, and 155 billion with a B weak fish every year. And the Martin Marietta, although it was required to assess all the impacts on all the fisheries, stopped counting after it counted those fish kills, and said that if this plant begins operating, it will collapse all the fisheries of the Delaware River. And in fact, as soon as the plant began operating, all those fisheries did collapse. Altogether on the East Coast, about 1 trillion fish a year are killed by the industry. It's illegal. The EPA has an obligation under the Clean Water Act to promulgate regulations that require the industry to use the best available technology for eliminating these fish kills. That technology is cooling towers. It's expensive. The utilities don't like it, so they've been able to block those regulations for 20 years. I sued them. We sued them 12 years ago, and last year we finally got a decision from the federal judge. We won the case, and the EPA was ordered to promulgate regulations. The Bush administration immediately came in and promulgated phony regulations that say best available technology essentially is whatever technology you're currently using, and just redefined the term best available technology. So now we're going to have to sue the Bush administration, and the likelihood is we'll win that suit, but it may take another 8 or 10 years, and in the meantime, global fisheries are collapsing, and this is one of the primary causes.
The Bush administration has a new proposal on regulating mercury emissions. Before we get to the proposal, can you just describe what the hazards are of mercury emissions?
Mercury is a potent neurotoxin. It causes a whole inventory of grim illnesses, including permanent IQ loss in children, renal damage, liver damage, and mutations, destruction to brain tissue and nervous tissue. Mercury is now ubiquitous in many of our fishes. For example, I live 2 miles from the state of Connecticut. It is now unsafe to eat any freshwater fish in the state of Connecticut because of mercury, with one exception, which is hatchery bred trout. I've worked on protecting the New York City water supply for almost 20 years, and New York's water comes from these upstate reservoirs that have been protected from industrial pollution for over 100 years. A few months ago, we found that the fish in them are unsafe to eat for mercury. There's no geological source of mercury in the state of Connecticut or in the New York City water supply, but that mercury is coming from air precipitation. And the primary source for those emissions in our country are coal-burning power plants, mainly in the Ohio Valley. About 40%, 40 to 50% of the mercury emissions in our countries come from coal, from these antiquated dinosaur coal-burning power plants that the Bush administration has recently given permission to continue discharging mercury forever.
Can you briefly explain the Bush administration's proposal to deal with mercury emissions and why you oppose it?
Yeah, under the Clean Water Act and under the Clean Air Act, the mercury emissions from these power plants are illegal. When Congress first passed the Clean Air Act, it recognized that there is no right to pollute our air. But the utility industry came in and said, wait a minute, we've made large investments in old plants and these big coal plants that cannot comply with the new standards in the Clean Air Act. Therefore, we're going to oppose the Clean Air Act. The compromise that was worked out was that those plants would be allowed to operate until they made major changes in their operations. That happened over the last 10 years. Most of them have made those major changes, but most of them, or many of them, did not upgrade as they were supposed to do under the Clean Air Act. So the Clinton administration Justice Department began suing them and prosecuting them because what they were doing was in many cases, a criminal activity. The Bush administration came in, dropped all of those lawsuits, and then changed the law so that they'll never have to comply with the new source performance standards. They can continue discharging and polluting at the same levels forever and even increase that pollution without being prosecuted or without violating the law.
You've said that the Bush administration has already done a lot to turn back environmental regulations, and he's been able to do that without having to go through Congress. However, there is a bill going through Congress. It didn't make it this year, but it will probably come back in some form in January, and that's the energy bill. I know you oppose this energy bill. What is your biggest problem with the energy bill?
Well, the energy bill does nothing to address the principal problem of our nation, which is dependence on fossil fuels and foreign oil. The energy bill instead is a $145 billion boondoggle to big oil, big coal, and the nuclear industry. The principal winners are those industries and the princes of Saudi Arabia. The big losers are the American people. The energy bill was hatched in 106 days of closed-door meetings between Vice President Cheney's Energy Task Force, which was composed of government officials all with energy industry pedigrees, and energy industry lobbyists. There's virtually nothing in the bill for conservation. The bill would exempt the oil industry, for example, from any liability for putting MTBE in our nation's water supplies. There are 2,000 towns and cities across the country that now have found that their water supplies are contaminated with MTBE, which was an additive that was put 20 years ago into our fuel by the oil companies. They claim that, you know, that EPA ordered them to do it, but in fact the record shows that they rammed MTBE down EPA's throat. Now we find that MTBE is cancer-causing, it flows easily through groundwater, and it's contaminated all of these drinking water wells. And the well owners in the towns and the cities across the country are now suing the energy industry for compensation to clean up this mess. What this bill does, which is a $50 billion value to the energy industry, is to simply exempt big oil from having to pay any of these claims and force local taxpayers and local consumers to clean up the mess that the oil industry made of their water supplies.
There was a movement to remove that MTBE provision from the energy bill. If that was removed, would you be any more enthusiastic about the bill?
No, the bill, there's nothing in that bill that does what we need done for our country and for the American people, which is to give us a more reliable energy supply and to reduce our dependence on oil and coal. That's what we ought to be doing. For example, the best thing that we could do would be corporate average fuel efficiency standards to improve the fuel efficiency of the American automobile. If we raise fuel efficiency standards in our cars by 1 mile per gallon, we get more oil than would be in two Arctic National Wildlife Refuges. If we raise it by 2.7 miles per gallon, we eliminate all of the oil that we import from Iraq and Kuwait combined. If we raise fuel efficiency by 7.6 miles per gallon, we eliminate 100% of our Gulf oil imports into this country. Think of what that could do for America. We would reduce our vulnerability to price shocks on the international oil market. We put money in the pocket of every American. If I had a car that got 40 miles per gallon rather than one that gets 25 miles per gallon, I'd have an extra $1,000 in my pocket every year, and so would every American. And think what that would do for our economy. At one point, President Bush sent us all a $300 check and called that an economic stimulus package, and we had to gut the Social Security Trust Fund in order to do it, and it was just for 1 year. Imagine if all of us were getting an extra $1,000 or $300 or $500 every single year forever. But, you know, $78 million worth of checkbook diplomacy between Detroit and Washington, D.C., over the past 10 years has effectively excluded that. The biggest advocate against fuel efficiency standards in this country over the past 10 years has been Spencer Abrams, and he was one of the authors of the energy bill. So obviously there's nothing in there that's going to do what we really need to be done to benefit America and our people.
One part of the energy bill that environmentalists successfully got removed was the part that would have allowed the drilling of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. How significant is it to you that that is no longer allowed within the bill?
It doesn't make the bill any better. It's like, you know, putting lipstick on a donkey. The bill is bad, you know, if you ask the administration officials, is there anything good in here for the environment, they say, well, you know, we got rid of the Arctic drilling provision, but the entire bill is a catastrophe for the American people. It's a huge boom for big oil, which incidentally is making record profits. The day that Cheney announced the Energy Task Force report, Exxon announced that it had tripled profits from the previous year. The energy industry has quintupled profits since 1999. So while many Americans were struggling through a recession, the energy industry was the one industry that was profiting both from the president's foreign policy and from his domestic policy.
You know, there are advocates of drilling of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge who say if you want a reliable energy future, you've got to start drilling there, and that will make us less dependent on foreign oil.
Well, that's nonsense. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge contains less than 0.2% of global reserves. Oil is an international commodity. The oil from the Arctic, most of it doesn't even come to our country. It's shipped to Europe, and it was being drilled by BP, which isn't even an American oil company. And it's very expensive oil. And even if you got all of the oil out of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, it would not reduce the price of oil at our pumps by even a penny per gallon. Our problem is we have trivial amounts of oil in this country now. We have about 2% of global reserves in our country. So even if we extract all of it and destroy our sacred places in the process, it's not going to, we cannot drill our way out of oil dependence. We have much cheaper sources of energy in this country and much more efficient sources of energy in this country, beginning with conservation. But we ought to be looking at renewables, and we ought to be exercising leadership to make the switch over the next 10 years to a hydrogen fuel economy. And that's the kind of leadership that we need from the White House.
President Bush does have a proposal to increase the development and use of hydrogen fuel and the development of hydrogen-fueled cars.
Well, yeah, he announced that proposal in a State of the Union address, and it's been labeled or heralded as, you know, as an act of environmental leadership. But the devil is in the details. And if you look at the details of that proposal, it's a joke. First of all, it's a trivial amount of money. We give about $55 billion a year in direct subsidies to the oil companies. And this proposal is for, I think, $1.4 billion. But that aside, the thing that environmentalists like about hydrogen is that hydrogen can be extracted from water. And its byproducts, when you burn it, are oxygen and water. There's no pollution that comes from your pipe. And so you could create a hydrogen economy without creating huge amounts of pollution from fossil fuels. But the president took his $1.4 billion and gave it to the automobile industry to figure out ways to extract hydrogen, not from water, but from oil and coal, which puts the same global warming gases and the same pollutants into our air. So it's really kind of a bait and switch. It's kind of a perverse use of the environmental mantle to shield something that is just going to benefit the oil and coal industry and the automobile industry.
One of your criticisms of the Bush administration when it comes to energy is that you say the administration cloaks its environmental policies in language designed to deceive the public. What's an example of that?
Well, everybody knows about the Healthy Forests Act, which is an act that actually allows kind of industrial 1950s-style industrial forestry on our protected lands that were formerly protected from cutting. The Clear Skies Initiative, which is really a way of adding more pollution to our water, which will make our skies dirtier. Environmentalists call it the Clear Lies Initiative. The administration, under the coaching of its pollster, Frank Luntz, has been told that they should use words like streamlining regulations rather than weakening regulations. The reason for this is a stealth attack, and the reason for it is that, and Frank Luntz has said this himself in a secret memo to the Bush administration that was obtained by NRDC, that the American public is against the president when it comes to these environmental rollbacks. They do not want our laws weakened. They want strict enforcement of our environmental laws. And this is true across the board, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And Luntz warned the administration that if they're going to roll back our environmental laws, they have to do it secretly. And they have to cloak their anti-environmental agenda in the mantle of environmentalism. And that's what the administration has done. And it's been very, very successful at this. Many of the rollbacks have occurred, the most damaging ones, behind the scenes, in the dark corridors of the White House, in the Office of Management Budget, under the leadership of John Graham, who has essentially transformed the agencies like EPA and the Department of Interior and the Department of Agriculture that are supposed to be protecting America's interest in our valuable resources, and has transformed those agencies into arms of the industries that they are meant to regulate. They are now captured agencies. The head of the Forestry Department is a former timber industry lobbyist. The head of public lands is a coal and mining industry lobbyist. And the national policies now reflect the agendas of those industries rather than the interests of the American public.
You have 6 children. 3 of them have asthma. How does that connect to your environmental activism?
Well, you know, we are suffering as a nation an asthma epidemic now. 1 out of every 4 black children in New York City has asthma. We don't know why this pandemic is happening, but we do know that the asthma attacks themselves are triggered by bad air days, particularly by particulates and ozone in the air. The primary source of particulates and ozone are Midwestern power plants that are operating illegally under the Clean Air Act. The Bush administration was, and I can watch my children gasping for air on bad air days. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, we are living in a science fiction nightmare right now where we are literally bringing children into the world where the air is too poisonous for them to breathe because somebody made a contribution to the Bush administration, because the industry gave $48 million to the Republican Party and to the Bush campaign during the 2000 campaign. And as a result of that, the industry itself has gotten billions of dollars in relief by not having to comply with the new source performance standards in the Clean Air Act that would have forced them to reduce the amounts of particulates and ozone that they're discharging into our air. I live 3 hours south of the Adirondack Mountains. That's the oldest protected wilderness on Earth. It's been protected since 1888. And yet half the lakes in the Adirondacks are now sterilized. And the reason for that is acid rain from those same power plants, which has destroyed the forest cover on the high peaks of the Appalachians from Georgia all the way up into Canada. So these power plants are imposing huge costs on the American public that they should have to pay. In a true free market economy, they would have to pay those costs themselves. And that is the purpose of our federal environmental laws, to reimpose the free market economy. But what the Bush administration has done is allowed itself to be bought off by this industry, so that they are now imposing these costs where my children can no longer breathe on bad air days. They're gasping for breath. They can't enjoy the seminal, primal experience of American youth, which is to go fishing with their father and eating the fish. And they can't go camping in the Adirondacks and enjoy the forests that have been protected since 1888 in those conditions.
You know, you've mentioned that three of your children have asthma. They were, of course, you know, born before George Bush became the president. So anything he's done is not directly responsible for the asthma that they have. But I'm wondering if say things were continued to head in the direction that President Clinton had been moving in environmentally, do you think that we would have been in much different shape than we are now environmentally?
Well, first of all, to answer your first question, we don't know why we're having an epidemic of asthma. Nobody knows what the causes are. You know, there's all kinds of explanations for it, but I can tell you in the last 5 years, the incident of asthma has doubled in 5 years among American children. We don't know why that is. There's plenty of suspicion that it comes from pesticides or hormones that are now ubiquitous in our food supply, but nobody really knows. What we do know is that asthma attacks are caused by bad air days, by ozone and particulates in particular. And those materials in our air have been increased, not decreased, by the Bush administration. Under the Clinton plan, those materials would gradually disappear, and in a short time, they would be, the incidence of those materials in our air would dramatically diminish. But under the Bush administration plan, which has already been implemented, those materials will remain in our air forever and even increase.
So much of America's attention has been focused on terrorism and the war in Iraq. How do you think that terrorism and the war has affected the amount of energy that the Bush administration is spending on environmental issues, and how much do you think that the attention to terrorism and the war is affecting public awareness of what's being done?
If you think back to August of 2001, President Bush had his back against the wall on environmental issues. He had tried to pass regulations that allowed arsenic in drinking water. He had abandoned the Kyoto Protocol. He had abandoned his own promises about limiting carbon dioxide. And the press and the public were furious, and the administration was feeling the political pain of them. All of that disappeared after September 11th. The environmental reporters and newspapers across the country were reassigned to cover terrorism and the war in Iraq, and the public attention was diverted. And, you know, when I go around, Terry, I go around the country and talk to people about these environmental rollbacks, and the initial reaction inevitably is, oh, you know, how could President Bush be doing this? How could this be true? We don't believe you. He hasn't had time to do this. And the fact is that the relentless attack on the environment, the assault on the environment, continued during the war in Iraq, but coverage of it ceased almost completely. And it's allowed the president and his cronies in the energy industry to dismantle our environmental laws without any public debate, without any public scrutiny or public complaint. Plus, you have a press that is very, very reluctant to criticize the president in a time of war. And a press that is not paying attention to these critical issues.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is the senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council and the president of Waterkeeper Alliance.